welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan Collier. It's my pleasure to be with you. Only be here 2 hours a day because at 2 o'clock we have the Council Connections show. But the first hour we're going to be talking to Anchor. We speak to them every now and again, and there's a couple of special weeks on and one coming up, and also then between 1 and 2. We've had to cut the PIP to back to half an hour today. Normally he's with us an hour because we've got the local commander of the police coming in to talk about a road policing forum, which is coming up in the very near future. It'd be a great opportunity for a lot of people to go and have their say. But first of all, it's my pleasure to introduce to you, first of all, Heidi, who's the CEO down at Anchor. How are you, Heidi?
Good, good, Alan. I'm very well today, thank you.
That's terrific. And also Dylan, we're going to be talking to Dylan as we get along. Welcome, Dylan. Heidi, first of all, I've seen your face on Facebook quite a lot in the last few weeks. You've been at all sorts of things. It's great to have you with us. But we're here specifically, I believe it's this week is Kinship Care Week, and we're going to ask you about that in a minute. And also next week's Foster Care Week.
Correct. That's right. Two very important weeks.
Right. Let's talk about, first of all, the Kinship Care Week. What is kinship and what are you doing to celebrate it?
Okay. Well, we often will send out fruit baskets and things like that and hampers to our carers during these 2 weeks. But more importantly, I guess, for your listeners, kinship care is a very ever-increasing sort of care response to children who are unable to live with their birth parents. I guess government policy is such that if you can place children with family or kith, you know, people who are close to family, then that's a lot better than them coming in and basically going, you know, going and being cared by strangers.
Across you, but let's just explain what kinship is. It's actually placing with a grandparent, parent, cousin, or somebody that's actually part of that family.
Yeah,
is that right?
That's right. That's right. And sometimes, occasionally, there's kith placements. So we actually have a kinship carer who was a teacher at a school, and she became aware of a child that needed care. And her and her husband put their hand up. So we call that a kith placement. But there's about 7,500 kinship carers of care placements across the state. So that's quite a lot of people. And what people don't realise is that, you know, and I think what the challenge with kinship care is that if you're, say, a grandparent that's caring for your grandchildren, what that means is that your own child or the partner of your child has been unable to care for the child. And so, and that can be a whole range of reasons from, you know, mental health issues, family violence, AOD issues. It can be a whole range of issues. But I really feel for people that are kinship carers because they're managing, obviously, what are some family issues.
It's not just looking after the child, is it?
It's not simple. And, you know, we expect a lot of them. You know, we'll often sort of say, well, look, it's not safe, you know, for your son or your daughter or whatever to see the children because of, you know, X, Y, and Z, whatever, or, you know, can you supervise that contact? And so, you know, that puts you in a very difficult relationship with your own children. And then we've got aunts and uncles that, you know, become estranged from the rest of the family because of what's happened. They've had to take the kids. It's quite fraught. But we do know that children who are placed with extended family or people that they know, you know, tend to do better, tend to be happier because they think, well, this is, you know, it's my family at least. Yeah. But it's tough. It's tough for these people that take on these kids.
And also you're often putting, not pressure, but you've obviously got people that are elderly people because sometimes they're the grandparents that take it on, aren't they?
Well, yes, we actually had one girl that was with her great grandmother. A few years ago, who was about 80 or so, you know. So I sort of felt for her because she was sort of trying to look after this teenager and we just couldn't quite kind of even relate to what that teenager was going through in their world, you know. So that was really tough. But I think, often what we find with kinship carers is they feel that they needed to do what they're doing. So they needed to step in and take over. They'll forego their retirement. They often have to go back to work. We know that a lot of the kinship carers are renting. They don't own their own house. They may be on aged care pension. So it's a pretty big ask.
Heidi, when you talk about kinship, are they placed there by the courts? Like, have the courts brought them out of the situation?
Yes. They are. It's a legal. It's got legalities behind it, if you like.
I can't imagine what the trauma would be, apart from for the child. But as you say, if you're the parent or the grandparent of the child, that means that you've got a problem between your own child or children have got a problem too, don't they? Could be mental. Could be all sorts.
Yeah, and look, I've spoken to many a kinship carer that, it's been their child that's hooked up with a pretty unsavoury partner or a partner that's had problems, taking them down dark paths, etc. So that's really heartbreaking when you think you've done the best for your own child and then it goes off the rails. So the kinship carers that do it, they do it because they believe in family. In fact, in Aboriginal culture, children only go to other family members. We certainly don't get involved in that. So it is, it's really important in Aboriginal families or that children are in Aboriginal care. I think they're unrecognised and they're quite quiet, they're quite quiet, quite silent. They just go on with their business. Kinship care has grown threefold since I've been at Anchor.
It has. Threefold. That's huge. Heidi, I've got to take a quick break and we'll come back. Now, what I'll do when we come back, I'll get you just briefly to explain the foster care week and then we'll talk to Dylan because I believe he's also a foster carer.
Correct.
Feel me. members of the Outback Club. They're all back down and they don't give up. They're all living in the land they love. Born and raised, they're members of the Outback Club. We're all members of the Outback Club. We don't back down and we don't give up. We're all living in the land we love. Born and raised, we're all members of the Outback Club.
We've been talking to Heidi, who's the CEO down at Anchor. We've been talking about this week being the Kinship Care Week, and our next week, I believe, is Foster Care Week. And who better to talk to than a foster carer? So we'll talk to Dylan. How are you, Dylan?
Yeah, good, thanks, Alan. How's the microphone?
Yeah, that's okay. Better than what it was. First of all, you've been involved for about 5 years, I believe.
My wife and I became foster carers about 5 years ago.
Right, so I've got to ask the first question, why did you get involved? At what stage did either you or your wife say, I think we should do this?
So I think we were both aware of the need for foster carers, and we discussed it kind of early on in our relationship. My wife was actually a child protection
worker. I wondered whether there was something. Yeah.
And so it was a very easy decision to make. We kind of were both on the same page from the get-go, and we signed up for the foster care training, which takes a while, so it doesn't all happen straight away for a lot of people anyway. So you've got time to prepare yourself.
And I guess Heidi's listening. So, how did you find Anchor? Like, you obviously went to Anchor for some reason, and we won't ask why you picked Anchor. But how did you find the training? And at the end, and I'm not criticising Anchor in any way, but I just want to know: did you feel fully equipped when it was time to take your first child?
Yeah, we did. I mean, look at
overwhelmed, no doubt.
Slightly, but I think it helped that my wife had some background in the field.
Yep.
But the training does prepare you as well as it can.
Yep.
I think it's like, I mean, if you talk to any parent in any capacity, they're all going to say, you know, nothing prepares you.
I've been there four times and I can guarantee that.
Yeah. So you are going to learn on the job and you're going to learn quickly, but you do have support. You do have the ability to call Anchor or your agency to ask for advice. We came into it, I think, as prepared as we could be.
Yep. Now, I see that you've got at least one long-term job, and you've done some emergency care. When you say emergency care, like how long are those children come in part of your life and then go to wherever they've got to go?
It can be anything from one night to months. We've got one. So we've had two long-term placements. And one of those became permanent. Our daughter became a permanent care placement, I guess, about a year ago, and she's with us for good now. So we've had everything from respite, emergency, long-term and permanent.
Dylan, I don't want to delve into your background because it's none of our business, but there is a reason behind this question. Do you have children of your own as well?
Oh, no, we don't.
Oh, right. It's just the only reason why I ask that and being a bit intrusive, well, I was just wondering how your own children react. But if you haven't got any children, well, that's terrific.
I can say, like, now that we've got, so our daughter, who's our permanent care placement, we've taken on other kids since then.
Yep.
So we've been able to witness how the, you know, our own daughter reacts to having other kids in the house.
Yep.
And it was interesting watching her go through all the different phases of, you know, excitement and then having her toes stepped on a little bit and
yep.
maybe feeling a little left out. But she's handled it really well. And we were meant to actually have another placement this week who ended up going into kinship care. And she was really excited about that.
Oh, that's great, isn't it? All right, we'll take a quick break and then we'll be back with more.
Tried to be something I really wasn't. Tried to please you any way I could. It didn't do no good. Then I tried squeezing in the latest fashion. In my diets ran from slim fast to Atkins. Realized after typo class I don't wanna make you happy. One who sees all my flaws and imperfections and believes I'm exactly what he likes.
Heidi, we're talking now about foster care. Now, I know in the past we really need to find foster carers, don't we? Because you believe that the numbers of children that'll need foster care are going to go up, and there's always a desperate need for foster carers. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. Unfortunately, Alan, what we see is we're not even sort of replacing the foster carers we have. So we've got under 1,000 foster carers now, whereas when I started, statewide, I mean,
yep.
When I started, it was well over 1,000 and we always had inquiries. Now we're losing more foster carers than we're actually recruiting each year. So the net of that is that we've got less foster carers.
Is that mainly due to age, Heidi?
Look, Alan, I think fundamentally our society has changed over the,
yep.
particularly over, there's been massive change over the last 10 years. The reality is that families have to have two wages in order to survive.
Yep.
So that means that neither one of the partnership can stay at home looking after children. In fact, Dylan and I were just talking about the fact that one-parent families are, you know, on the rise, very much so, because people can't afford more children. So I think a lot of people, the barrier for them is they think they can't afford it. I guess that, though, that you know, I don't know whether that's, you know, that would be actually fact. You do actually have to have a spare bedroom. Yep. So you actually have to have a house, you know, a house that's actually got enough bedrooms. So, you know, if you're in a unit that's only got two bedrooms, well, and you can't afford to rent a house or buy a house or whatever, then, you know, that's going to be tough. I think the other thing that's happened is that that people have become, you know, our society's become very transactional. I think there's not a lot of areas left now where people feel like they're part of a community. You know, I think certainly some of out in the Yarra Ranges and some of those areas, you know, there's still little towns that where people think, oh, I'm part of a community. But most of us that just live in suburbia don't really have a community. And so
don't even know our neighbours.
No, and don't see the need. Yep. Whereas back in the day, you know, back when I was growing up and things, you know, I think the problems of the day were very evident to people because they were just down the street or it's the next door neighbour or whatever, and people felt the urge to, you know, to help out. I think also too, Alan, a lot of foster carers have come through the church system.
Yep.
So a lot of churches were the basis for people being foster carers. Often, you know, it'd be one couple might do it and then another couple's, oh, that's a good idea, I think I'll do that. You know, you've got that sort of steam there. Yep. And that is often still what happens. But, of course, the churches now are either going into mega churches where there's, you know, 10,000 parishioners, or they're dying out. The parishioners are actually sort of 70 plus. And a lot of the smaller churches say that they just can't get families in. So I think that was probably a rich source of foster carers. Yep. I also think too, and I'm going to just tell you just a quick little story. I was at a business event not long ago, and there was a woman that I met there, and she happened to be doing some work. She was a computer type person, some work in one of our other not-for-profits. And this particular not-for-profit provides backpacks, and they're backpacks full of just the basics.
Backpacks for kids.
Yeah.
We had them in a few weeks ago.
And yep. So there's a couple of organisations that do this. Anyway, she went to the organisation, to their offices, and they said, oh, would you like to just come around and have a look sort of thing? And she said, oh, yeah, okay. And she said, and then I went into this warehouse and I saw all these shelves of backpacks. And she said, oh, what are they all for? And the person she was talking said, oh, well, they're for kids coming into care. And she said, what do you mean coming into care? You know, kids that we have to remove from their parents, whatever. And she said, but there's rows and rows of them. And they said, yeah, and we'll be restocking them again very soon. Yep. And she just said to me, why do we not know this? Why does the community not know the situation that we're in, that there are children being removed from their parents and need care? And so I think, you know, to some degree, Alan, what we struggle with is pushing through the noise and getting out to people and communicating with people about how much we need foster carers and for people to take that risk. You know,
and the need
to
is desperate.
Step in. And the need is absolutely desperate.
Heidi, I had the backpacks in Backpack for Kids talking to them two or three weeks ago. And, of course, when some of these kids get taken, particularly if there's been a sexual event against them, of course, one of the first things the police say, well, a lot of these kids walk out the house just with the clothes they're wearing.
Yeah,
they get in the police station, the first thing they say is take all your clothes off because we want the evidence. So they haven't got anything.
Look,
anyway, so...
Most kids are forced to leave without much.
Yep. Mm. So I guess... when we come back, you're going to do a bit of a sales pitch on needing the foster carers. But, Heidi, can I just ask you, before we take this break, do the government subsidise any of these foster parents? Because they should, because if not, they're going to have to pay to put them somewhere else.
Absolutely. Look, all foster carers get an allowance, but it's really just a reimbursement for expenses.
Yep.
I will say that Victorian carers are one of the lowest paid in the nation. They're way behind.
Yeah.
Way behind other states. Look, you know, in some situations, particularly if carers are needing to drop days of work and things to look after kids, which sometimes they often do, they, you know, there's not any compensation from that. But you're right, One, there is a small reimbursement, but two, is it enough? Most carers say no, that it's really, and they all say they take a lot out of their own pockets, their own superannuation, their own savings. It costs them money to be a foster carer.
And these parents or these people that are taking on being a foster carer, they've got all the, well, I'd say trauma, but all the work to do what they've got to do, and they're saving us millions because otherwise these children have to go somewhere else, and it wouldn't be in such a great environment. It'd be a lot better for any government to make sure it was fully funded.
Yes, absolutely.
Got to take a break and I'll be back with more.
They say our music's having a revival. They say that country's in decline. But I say, what the hell are they talking about? The country has been here all the time. There's a lot more people now admitting like country music after all. Now there's dollar signs alongside country music. It's cowboy boots and hats for one and all. They say that country's middle of the road now. They say they've had enough of all this noise. I suppose the music wheel has turned full circle. Our ballads and our stories now enjoyed. Or they say our music's having a revival. They say that country's on the climb. But I say, what the hell are they talking about? The country has been here all the time. Play Charlie. When rock and roll came out and just took over, music just went underground. Then somehow rock got tangled up with country. This country music added to the sound. Oh, they're singing songs I've only just discovered. Just hear them talk about their brand new sound. But there's nothing new about the songs they're singing. It's just that country music's come to town. Hey, oh, they say our music's having a revival. They say that country's on the climb. But I say, what the hell are they talking about? The country has been here all the time. Sure it has. The country has been here all the time.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
Now, Dylan, you're at what I'd call the cliff face. You're one of the foster carers. What, for you and your wife, what do you think has been the greatest outcome of it for you, like how you feel, or if you had times when it hasn't been as good as you'd like, or what?
There's definitely been like challenges along the way. You are dealing with a system that could be a lot better as far as the courts go, and especially on the government side of things. But it's been probably the best thing we've done as a couple, kind of forging these relationships with these kids and making a real difference in their life at the time, especially. You know, you kind of realize that there's going to be long-term effects of your influence and care with these kids, but they're often in really, really difficult and traumatic circumstances, and just being able to offer that safe place for them to land and offer that security has been really rewarding.
Dylan, can I ask you, and because we don't know the child's name, so and we haven't purposely used your surname, do you have to deal with the parents of that child, or is the child being completely removed?
So in our case, we developed a relationship with our daughter's biological parent early on.
Yep.
But that's, and so they have contact occasionally, but that's not the norm. Usually you don't really have any interaction with biological parents at all, and that's all handled by caseworkers.
Yep.
And we did that by our own choosing. But yeah, no, usually you're kind of kept separate, which I think is why...
Good idea.
Yeah, and that's why kinship is, I think, a lot more difficult than strict foster care.
Yep.
And why we've wound up with a lot of kids coming to us from kinship. So I think the pressure on kinship carers is really... can be a lot more than on foster carers.
Dylan, I asked Heidi a few minutes ago about... because I think the government should fund these things a lot better, but I'm not here to slag off at governments because this is not a political show at all. Do you feel that they could step up with better payments or better support?
Yeah, yeah, they could, 100%. Yeah. I mean, think all families could use a lot more support at the moment, but carers in particular, we often have... expenses that you might not usually have all at once. You know, you're kind of hit with these kids come to you with nothing. You know, they do the story about the garbage bag full of dirty clothes is almost 100% of the time.
So, is it?
Yeah, so you have to replace a lot of things. You have to pay for a lot of services. We do get, you know, we do get reimbursements for a good chunk, but yeah, the government could definitely do more, because at the end of the day, we are living in a society, we're reliant on one another, and we've shifted so much of that responsibility to the government, who kind of aren't keeping up. And so
that's the point I was getting at, that
yeah.
You know, they sort of, it would cost them millions and millions of dollars to replace the foster carers. And they still wouldn't have the same sort of outcome with the children, and yet all governments don't want to pay for anything, do they? They'll throw a pittance and say, oh, well, we've covered that.
Yeah. Luckily, you know, we do have a lot of people that want to help, want to step up, and I don't think people realise that foster care is very manageable. It's very doable. You don't have to be superhuman. You can... be a regular person, and all you have to want to do is put your hand up and say, you know, I'll have a crack, I'm here to help.
And obviously Anchor supports you right through the whole way too, don't they? So if you've got a problem, then you just go to Anchor.
For sure.
I've got to take a quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk to Heidi, and she's going to tell everybody why you should get involved with being a foster carer.
Sometimes they seem as fragile as glass.
Just a quick reminder, one straight after 1 o'clock news and weather, we'll have our private investigator, Peter Long, PI Pete from Absolute Facts, and then at 1:30 we'll have the police in and we'll be talking about the road policing forum that's on in a couple of weeks' time. So stay with us through till 2 o'clock, and then, of course, Council Connections will be on between 2 and 3. Heidi, we've heard all about Dylan and what a great job he's doing, and I admire people who do that. First of all, there's not a lot of restrictions. Obviously, you want people of good repute in that, but it doesn't matter if you're single or anything like that anymore, does it?
Yeah, I think it's really important to dispel those myths about what foster carers should look like. They come from all walks of life, but yes, they can be singles, couples, same-sex couples, people with, you know, who are renting, people who own their own house, any age, only have to be 18 plus. Any age. I think people sometimes think, oh, but I've got, I'm too old. I think, 60 is the new 50 these days. So, I think it's a great option for people perhaps, who have, really got through it with their own kids, who then might think, well, we've got a bit left. We've got a bit left for maybe some other kids. And I think, as Dylan said, I think to make a difference in one person's life or one child's life is actually incredibly rewarding for your own life. And yes, there are challenges, and there's finances and all that sort of stuff. But I think I'm sure that Dylan's reflection of it's the best thing we've done as a couple comes from the sense of, as a couple, they've done something really meaningful and really, really important in the world and made a difference to a person's world. And that counts for something and should count for something.
Heidi, now, if we've got people listening today, whether they be grandparents or parents that think they might try this on, in a minute you're going to give us all the contact details, but they don't have to jump into it sort of full-time straight away. Like, they could become an emergency carer for you, couldn't they, until they see how it all settles down?
Yeah. Look, I'd absolutely encourage people to even just ring for that first conversation. We have a really lovely gentleman, Shane, who's our recruitment and retention specialist, and he's a lovely guy, and he is very happy to go and meet with people in their homes or talk to them over the phone. And, a no-strings-attached kind of conversation just to find out about it. Then there is, the training, and there's, going through being prepared. But yes, most of our people start off with emergency that might be overnight, might be a short term, just to see how they go. And then, what I think is really important is people take the time to adjust to having another child in their house. And I'm sure that Dylan's story, as many people's story, is that you go along and you get used to it, and then you think, oh, wow, this child's really fitting into our lives, and we're fitting into their life. And it just, it does that. It starts to stick like glue. So, but people can start at their own pace. That's absolutely for sure.
And we need to mention too, because in most of these cases, it isn't it's not the child's fault, the reason they've been there with in front of the courts. Absolutely. And then being put in foster care. 99% of the time, it's something that's gone wrong in the family, isn't it?
Oh, 100% of the time, I would suggest.
Yeah.
That children are not responsible for what their parents can and can't do, or are not able to do. So no, 100% of the time, it's absolutely not their fault. And I think that's, that is really, really important. But, overwhelmingly, the parents, it's not their fault either. There's often reasons that they're just not able to care for their child. I have never met a birth parent. I've met many, many birth parents over 40 years. Yep. There's not any of them that don't love their children. They just were unable to care for them for whatever reason at the time. And it's just, it's no one's fault. And I think that what's really important for people to think about is it does take a village to raise a child. Yep. And we all are part of this.
when in the case of Dylan's case, and I don't want to get too close there because, for obvious reasons, to these children, once they become foster children and they're handed, obviously this goes through the courts, do you ever get a case where the parents then come and can get the children back, or
look, the system is designed to make children safe,
yep,
until they can return safely to their family, to their parents.
So there is an expectation
that's the system. That's why we have the system. The system is make children safe until they can return to their parents. Now, in many cases, nothing changes at home and it's still too unsafe.
Yep.
However, the aim always has to be for children to return. I think the other thing too, and I'm sure Dylan would absolutely agree with me, is that birth family contact and a child's identity of who is my, you know, my tummy mummy, or who is my birth mother or father or whatever, is incredibly important to children in their identity. Children are adaptable, and I'm sure that, you know, Dylan and his wife, you know, have their words, whether it's mum and dad or their names or whatever, but they will still retain that sort of, well, you know, your tummy mummy is this person, and they, you know, and because kids start asking questions, and it's really important we can answer those questions.
Oh, yeah, that, it will, you know, with our heritage.
Yeah, it's extremely important. It's extremely important to us as human beings to know where we came from.
Heidi, we're starting to run out of time pretty quick.
Yes.
Can you give us some contact details and how people are going
absolutely.
To find out more, please?
As I say, please just even just pick up the phone for a conversation. There's no ties. You can call 8761 9040. That's 8761 9040. But a good way of doing it is to go to our website, anchor.org.au. That's probably easiest for most people, and navigate your way through to becoming a foster care. It's sort of very prominent on our website. And, you know, as I say, you know, it's really important for people. We know that people consider being foster carers a very long time before they actually make that call.
Do they?
And that, yeah, that's right. It's a major life decision. To make. So it is an important decision to make, but I'd really encourage people to even just have that conversation. You know, maybe one person in the partnership knows more about it and is keener than the other. Well, have the other ring and just have a conversation about it. Yeah.
Heidi, something I don't want to cut across you, but something that we have mentioned before, and we have only very basically touched on it today, is that you believe there's going to be a bigger need for foster care in the future, don't you?
I think there's going to be a need for all types of care in the future. The population is growing, and so therefore then, you know, the number of foster carers, we need more, you know, as the population grows, so does the population of children that require care. And at the moment, I think that the most alarming thing is we're losing more foster carers per year than we're recruiting. That's probably our main, you know, our main concern at the moment.
Yep. All right. Look, unfortunately, time's fast running out. Thank you for being with us yet again, Heidi.
Thank you again, Alan. Really.
No worries.
And thanks to your listeners for listening.
Yep. And also, Dylan, look, I think you're doing a terrific job, and I hope it continues to go well for you. And I'd wish you were able to say to me, no, look, we're more compensated than what we really need to be.
Thanks, Alan.
So, all right, I've got to go, but thank you for making yourself available,
Alan.
Dylan and Heidi, and I'm sure Heidi will be talking between now and Christmas, although Christmas is fast coming up too, isn't it?
Oh, Alan. Don't say that.
All right.
Thank you
very much for your time, and we'll talk to you later on. And all the best with you, Dylan.
Cheers. Thanks, Alan.
All right.
Bye.